Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. It's time for the very last of our draft countdown shows. We're looking at the inside linebackers today. Joining me for that is Nick Mehta. Nick, how you doing?
Doing well. You know, it's draft season. Baseball's back. Even though the Orioles aren't winning, I'm playing golf again. It's a good time of year.
Life is good. Life is good indeed. The inside linebacker position is not one, I think, that a lot of people are looking at the Ravens and saying they need players, but they do have a significant deficit coming up at the position in 2027. Roquan Smith will be here for 26. Never really was in doubt. Only about a $7 million savings for cutting him. Next year, that balloons to $20 million, though, in 2027 if he's cut. So I presume he will be gone then. They also are probably going to lose Trenton Simpson at that point, or certainly he's scheduled to be a free agent after the 2026 season. So the Ravens are in need, potentially, of a linebacker in this draft to get the developmental curve started.
Yeah, it's interesting with Roquan because my philosophy with linebackers is 80-20. Ideally, I have a Josh Bynes or a what's his name, Daryl Smith, in there with a Teddy Buchanan, for example, or one of the rookies we'll talk about, or one of the prospects we'll talk about today. And as great Roquan has been for the team, he has not been a force multiplier in the last 2 years. Now, how much of that is attributed to Zach Wirth's defense, and how much will that change in Jesse Minter's defense? We'll see. And so I'm very, very curious to see what Roquan can do this season, because as you mentioned, it is a pivot year next year for him, next offseason. As for the running mates, you know, the Ravens have young linebackers that are intriguing, but no one that obviously has proven themselves. You know, you have Jay Higgins, who looked good in the preseason, but barely played in the regular season, had that injury. And of course, Buchanan, who to me is a guy that is kind of the level of investment I would want to see in the linebacker position. Kind of one of those 80-20 style solutions, pairing him with a veteran.
Okay, so and not a fourth round pick this year would also be okay at inside linebacker for your fourth round or any day three pick.
I think it would be a day three pick for me. It wouldn't shock me to see the Ravens spend a day two pick on this class in particular, and we'll talk about that. But for me, I think it's a day three need because you, I don't know to what extent you need an instant starter at all. But the Ravens also don't go looking for instant starters always in the draft. And that's, to me, at linebacker, you're usually asking for trouble if you are counting on a rookie to be able to come in and start even as the number two linebacker right away.
Yeah, that has worked out for the Ravens. It worked out with Ray Lewis. It worked out with Mosley. It doesn't always work out. Did not work
those
out.
Those are first rounders, though.
Yeah, did not work out with
Patrick
Queen.
Right, and those are first round picks. Right. Sorry. Queen was very late in the first round, but, you know, Mosley was, I think, 18th or something in that range, I want to say. 18, 16, and even then, you know, it is such a risk. And even Buchanan was a unusual case, and you could see him dealing with the learning curve as the season went on. So it's interesting with so much investment in Roquan and that pivot offseason for him coming up that I mentioned to see. Are the Ravens looking for a long-term guy to go out to replace Roquan in 27 or 28 in this draft? Or are they looking for someone who can maybe be his running mate or maybe be an 80-20 type of solution moving forward?
Yeah, I know Voss is even bigger on this than I am. I'm okay playing one inside linebacker, and I think Roquan has certainly earned his contract. The problem is the Ravens haven't paid 2/3 of it. As of this point, they've had 3 of the 5 years go through, but they've only paid, you know, about 1/3 of the total dollars involved. They cut the total dollars to $80 million by cutting him next year. It's a position where if you do spend, you're not spending somewhere else. So the Ravens have options at the top of this draft that would be kind of exciting. We'll talk about them a little later, but they also have holes to fill. Jake Hummel departed. He was a solid special teams guy. I'm sure they're going to make room for Higgins. Chandler Martin, I think, got signed elsewhere, right? He's departed
Eagles.
From the Ravens. Yeah. So that's a bummer.
Eagles.
Yeah. And I expect them to continue with a dime role. So the kind of role they're looking for is a weak side linebacker. Looking forward a year, two possibilities. One is Buchanan moves to Mike. And they get another two down will, probably Buchanan, might take the green dot even, probably Hamilton keeps it. Then you have lots of flexibility when you get your linebackers off the field. So that would be nice. But then they're looking for a two down Will to play dime, probably in that case. I think you always kind of need a backup Mike. And that's something the Ravens, I'm not sure they have right now. And we're not sure about Buchanan's health, even though he's supposed to be ready for camp. We're really not sure.
Yeah, and I think one of the other X factors that people kind of been talking about, but maybe don't want to, is this is a best player available team. If Caleb Downs is available at 14, I don't put it past Eric DaCosta to run that card up. Downs is an incredibly talented player. Mm-hmm. And then you're in a position where you're playing dime all the time, basically. And so I'm kind of curious about that X factor element of it. But like I said earlier, to me, the biggest factor is Jesse Minter's defense and what does he want to do? Because he did quite a good job with Diane Henley and Junior Colson when he was in L.A., who were not particularly heralded guys. I think one of them was a day two pick, but not particularly heralded guys, and they did well. So to me, part of it is, you know, the change in Roquan usage. Part of it is the development. But like you're saying as well, it's the approach to the three different downs and how they want to defend the run, how they don't want to defend the pass. For me, when I'm looking at linebackers in this draft class, looking at linebackers generally, linebacker prospects generally, the thing I'm always thinking about is translation to the NFL. It's, you know, the to me, the hardest position, maybe other than quarterback, to transition to the NFL because of the mental processing required and how different the NFL offenses run to what you see in college, how different the responsibilities can be. And so, you know, one thing that Minter and McDonald were really good at were at streamlining that and making things easier for their inside linebackers. And so I'm curious to what extent Minter is going to be able to do that in Baltimore.
That's a great comment, by the way, that it is a difficult position to transition to. One of the problems is there, everybody else on the field in coverage is pretty much a coverage specialist that you can count on to be at the highest level or they wouldn't be in the league. Linebackers have to fill multiple roles, and their coverage responsibilities in particular, a place where they can let down a team very easily, particularly in their early standpoints. And offensive coordinators and quarterbacks both look at the opposing linebackers first to see how they can they beat a team with the intermediate passing game between level two and level three and the play action game. And will they bite? You know, can they drop deep enough to have any impact between L2 and L3? Are considerations that quarterbacks and offensive coordinators require proof of before they move on. And so some of the guys who are really specialist run defenders are very limited. Guys who are like Patrick Queen came into the league with no ability to cover and had to be designated as pass rushers, then also force non-versatility on the Mike linebacker they play with. Actually, Queen was playing the Mike, really miscast in that role, but he was playing the Mike when he was a rookie. And that was, you know, not working out either. But you're just the lack of versatility in your running mate that you create if you can't handle the passing component is a very big deal, and it's something the Ravens can need to be cognizant about with anybody they draft at the position.
Yeah, I'm typically more, especially looking at the prospects I have listed, I'm more optimistic about, you know, matching running backs and tight ends and coverage, but it's the zone dropping. You know, I think we talk so much about man coverage. Teams play zone way often, yeah, way more often than
the time,
man.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's all about being able to drop in your zones, hit your depth. You know, this is an issue with Roquan the last 2 years with the depth of his zone drops and getting beat over the top of him with split safety shells behind him. Huge problem. And so that, to me, just shows you even Roquan, a guy who's experienced and should not be having those problems, they can still pop up and completely destroy your defense. I mean, that's the middle of your defense, the middle of the field that the linebacker is supposed to occupy. So it's interesting. It's talked about as a devalued position, too. It's because of how crucial it is, but also because a lot of the best athletes and best players of that size and shape end up playing middle linebacker. And end up in that position. So it's to me, it's always a bit of a tough group to scout and project to the NFL. So much of it depends on their mental development.
All right. Well, let's get right into it. And I want to say we both have made our 10-to-1 lists here. And I believe we both did it from the perspective of how does this player fit and work for the Ravens? It's a Ravens centric 10-to-1 list. And I'll have explanations about that. I don't know if good explanations, but I'll have explanations about that, why I put people in the position they did relative to others who I was less favorable for fit purposes.
Yeah, I think, again, with the Ravens, it's both schematic fit, but also their short and long-term needs. This team drafts for need more than they claim is one thing I would note. And so that's why, to me, a day two linebacker might be the best player available, but it really doesn't seem like a high priority position. So I'm hoping that they're able to avoid it. But there are certainly guys at the top of my list that if they're available at 80, it's going to be almost impossible not to run the card up.
Right. I would agree. I've got a kind of a draft darling of mine at 45 that I wouldn't mind seeing either. But let's jump right into it at number 10. Who's your guy?
Alabama's Justin Jefferson. This is a guy who I've had on my radar really since 2024. He wasn't a full-time starter that year, but just watched him play and play like a Raven jumped into my head and it stayed there. Super, super athletic, undersized. But to me, this is a late day three pick. This is a comp pick kind of thing. I wouldn't spend a lot on him because he has a lot of work to do in terms of the processing. And he's just smaller, and he hasn't figured out how to use his athleticism to kind of out-position, out-leverage guys in the run game. Just does not stack and shed as well as you want to see a guy who is going to be a primary run defender when he gets in the NFL. In college, he was able to run around guys, and his kind of power and explosiveness was enough. He's going to need a lot more than that at the pro level. But the reasons I like him are just, you know, I saw him improve from his 24 to 25 film, especially in coverage, which was a big thing to me. And his movement skills offer ways to use him as a blitzer. To me, this is a worthwhile day three linebacker investment. You have instant special teams upside. You can use him as a run defender on early downs, maybe not right away, but as he develops his technique and as a blitzer. And coverage is always going to be the question. It's going to be the question for a lot of these guys. But again, this is a late day three pick we're talking about.
All right. I looked at Jefferson. I have him at 14th. He's a very interesting prospect. First of all, I spent 2 years at Pearl River Community College, which is in southern Mississippi. Pearl River's famous graduates include Jimmy Buffett, Whitney Miller, who was the winner of the first U.S. version of the Master Chef contest, and former Raven Seth Roberts actually went there as well for JUCO ball. But then Jefferson went to for 3 years at Alabama after that. So, you know, that speaks to some positives, certainly. Extremely undersized at 6'0", 223. He does have some speed. I looked at him. He's much too small to play Mike, so he'd be a will guy. If he's on the field as a will, it's primarily going to be as a pass coverage, passing down will, which means he's a really, I think, more of a likely to be a sub-package linebacker than a guy who would play three downs. If he's a sub-package linebacker, he'll go to a committed nickel team that doesn't even play dime, and that makes him kind of a lousy fit for the Ravens, unfortunately, because they're definitely dime committed with Hamilton.
Yeah, one thing I should have mentioned, the play like a Raven part, violent, explosive tackler. It's that kind of aesthetic feel of playing like a Raven that I felt like I saw. And once he kind of the athleticism checked out for me, that's why I kept him on the list. Maybe a little more of a personal choice.
All right, it's fine. I got a couple more things to say about him. His ball production is actually below the line career. He's got one interception, six passes defense, and 73 career targets. If you have Jefferson, you don't need a dime back. That's the way that I would look at the team that gets him. I think some other team will have him as a priority free agent, but I like him. I mean, he'd be a good special teams player. He'd bring that to the game right away. He's had a fair amount of exposure. No problem as a seventh round, lock him down. Don't let him get into the UDFA process. But I think size scares me a little bit about how he can be an impactful player for the Ravens. So number 14 for me, still honorable mention, but not in my top 10. I'll move along and go to my number 10 guy, who's Caleb Elarms-Orr of TCU. 6'2", 234, ran a 4.47 40. He turns 23 in August. That is normal age. If you're 23 already, that's bad at draft time. If you're 23 this year, that's okay. There's a lot of guys who just turned 21 in this linebacker group, a lot of three-year college players, and that makes that a big differentiating factor among the players. So Elarms-Orr is a little older than normal, but he's not super old. He's a very mixed athletic profile, excellent jumps in 40, poor shuttle and bench. He is one, like I said, one of the older guys. Medical for an ACL suffered in March of 21 as a senior in high school that caused him to redshirt as a freshman at Cal. You know, that's enough in the past that I guess we look at his college work and we see the value of that, as opposed to treating that as an ongoing medical concern. But I don't like previous knee injuries under any cases. Coverage, okay. 6.8 yards per target, career 99.3 OPR. Not great. Certainly his stops to missed tackle ratio is what you'd be buying this guy for. 5.3 to 1, 53 stops and 10 missed tackles in 25 when he was first team all Big 12. He's a better athlete than a run defender. He is not a particularly great block shedder. And when I see that, I get worried right away from a draftable inside linebacker. I want that quality in particular. It's just modest ball production. Instincts are regular. And that's when I say ball production. In this case, I'm talking about fumbles forced and whatnot. His instincts are something that are regularly bashed by scouts. Now, this used to be, I grew up with Baltimore baseball in the 1970s. And one player that the announcers at the time, Chuck Thompson and Bill O'Donnell, would go out of their way to talk about being slow was Doug DeCinse. And it didn't really stand out as being a particular slow guy. But, you know, when a lot of people like are on the same group think talk about how not good speed on the bases, Doug DeCinse is out there right now. So, you know, it might take a single into the gap to get him home kind of thing. That's the, you know, that's something you probably start to get worried about him. Regularly been a play action victim against the pass. He has a plus pressure rate and a 37% career close rate. And that's quarterback hits plus sacks divided by total pressures. And I'm using the PFF contributions there. That's a good rate for an inside linebacker. Be a two down will, special teams player that will significantly limit his value. For me, he has about a sixth round value to the Ravens. That would be where the price is right. And I'm not sure he'll drop that far. I think somebody else may want him for a larger role.
This is kind of perfect, actually, because he's my number nine.
Okay.
Linebacker. And I don't want to repeat what you said too much. So I'll just kind of give my kind of brief similar overview. To me, this is a better version of Justin Jefferson in a way. Similarly athletic, though he might not be quite as much of an elite athlete as Jefferson. But one thing is, I don't think athleticism comes at quite as much of a premium for this position as it does for others in the draft. Again, because that I'm looking for the processing. This is, like you said, the biggest drawback with Irem Zoras, the thing that's going to limit him the most. But I think that his special teams upside, his athleticism are just instant. Ready to contribute on special teams. Like you said, I think he's mainly going to be a run defender. He's got kind of the athleticism to get better in that regard. But again, so much more of that is about his ability to read offenses and pick up routes as they develop. I think you pretty much covered the rest of it. I don't see him making a ton of impact plays. He's a fine tackler, but not necessarily an explosive one. And so I think that's kind of where I land on him.
All right. Fair enough. Your number nine guy then was Elam Zor. So we're going to my number nine guy, right? And that's Bryce Betcher of Oregon. And let me get down to my notes on him. 6'1", 233, ran a 4.69 at his pro day. That comes with a single star. Not an ideal kind of sideline to sideline speed. He's a little small and below average athletic profile, but he does have a clean medical. He's one of the oldest in the draft class. He turns 24 in July. Now, there was a comment about DaCosta from last night's event where he had talked, and we're recording this on Friday, so it's after the Thursday night uniform reveal. Actually, it was the Liars Luncheon. It was on Wednesday that he talked about going from 4% players who are 24 and above to 18% players that are 24 and above among their 197 draftable. And some of it's NIL and there's no doubt the college game has changed and made it easier for players to stay in college, but there's still a big difference between a 24-year-old prospect and a 21-year-old prospect. And you have a lot of that choice showing up at inside linebacker. He is a ball of energy on the field. He was a second team all Big 10 in both 24 and 25. He won the Burlsworth Award for the nation's top player who began as a walk-on. He actually played baseball at Oregon in 2021 and walked on to play special teams only on the football team in 22. And now he's, in the draft and probably is going to get drafted here. He's very high effort, sifter through traffic, not a guy you'll question for having an aversion to contact. So that was we're going to talk about Patrick Queen a few times here, no doubt. I don't want to beat the guy up, but the aversion to contact that he had was something I can't tolerate in a linebacker. And Betcher doesn't have that at all. That's not his problem. He has a lack of quickness. When you see him trying to go sideline to sideline, he can follow traffic. If the play's getting stringed out normally, he can cover it. If he's the guy who has to be on the edge trying to run down the running back, he often gets cornered. He's a very good stop rate, also misses his share of tackles. What do I have for a 3.5-1 stops to miss tackle ratio? Is a little bit below the line, but he's got 49 stops in there, which is a high number for an inside linebacker. So he's making a lot of tackles that are close to the line of scrimmage that result in defensive wins, is what that means. Versus a pass, he's definitely a linebacker that QBs are going to try and pick on with play action. Despite 86 career targets, he's done a reasonable job with an 89.2 passer rating against, and importantly, no college penalties. There's several inside linebackers, by the way, who never got penalized, and that's really unusual considering the coverage responsibilities of the position that would have happened, but he didn't have any. He has some great plays beating a running back on a delayed blitz. To go out there and take a look at his highlight film, you'll really see those. He has some big playability with 10 passes defense, 2 interceptions, and 4 forced fumbles in the last 3 seasons. Good ball production, so he's on it. I think he'd be a backup Will or Mike. He'd immediately be among the team's special teams leaders. And in a dream scenario, he continues to play with a chip on his shoulder that's got him all the way from baseball to walk on to, being the Bullsworth winner. And he continues to ascend. But the chance of that is less at age 24. And he probably is who he is at this point. It's an undeniable concern, the age and projecting any additional development, but he could be a good one contract player. And I've had my discussions with Garnett West about age here, and I really hate it in a first round pick, but if we're talking about a sixth round pick or seventh round pick, no problem. I mean, your expectation for them is one contract anyway. And if a guy like this is a one contract plus survivorship as a special teams player, as we've seen from inside linebackers with the Ravens a number of times, then that's a perfect place to draft him.
Yeah, I think Betcher probably would have been my 10. A, if I just kind of wasn't partial to Jefferson, and B, if there were just a little, I'm a little bit concerned about his profile. He played both baseball and football at Oregon. So one of the things is that he was drafted, I think, in the 13th round by the Astros a year or two ago. And so he has a baseball career theoretically waiting for him. And he's not the kind of Kyler Murray number one overall pick who was going to stay in football no matter what. So that's something that, as a non-scout executive who's never gotten a chance to talk with him and understand what what his thinking is with that, is why I kept him off this list. I was very, very impressed with his abilities, given the fact that he was doing both of those things. And that shows a lot about his work ethic, his football IQ, all really positive things there. But to me, the age.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. find support and therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The age is also a concern. And to me, it's part of it's just seeing what his role would be in the NFL, because like I said, I like the developments I saw from him in terms of his instincts and play recognition. It's still nowhere near enough to play in the NFL. I don't know if I'm like super excited about him on special teams. He's a fine athlete. He's not like a super elite one. And so I think that's why, you know, yes, he would be a one contract player, and I'm just not as sure what you're getting out of that contract. But I see, it's hard because I see potential in some of the things that are important to me and some of the ways he showed development. But I, like you said, I just think he might be who he is. And the baseball thing is kind of enough to just worry me in the back of my head. I probably need to read a little bit more up on what he said about it specifically, if he has.
Okay, so I'll just tell you, as a baseball guy, at age 24 in July, he has zero value. He has zero value to any baseball team. He's not a prospect that they would even consider on any track if they brought him in. And the typical place he would start is at A-ball. A 24-year-old A-ball player is not a pro prospect in any shape. So I wouldn't worry about that offsetting his football career.
That's a good note. That's good to know, because that's kind of one of the things that popped up in his report. And because he's not like a super, super high-level prospect, it is slightly more of a choice because he's not a super, super high-level prospect in the NFL either.
All right. I think we're to your number eight guy now.
Yeah, my number eight is BYU's Jack Kelly. Part of this is just his starting experience, 2 years at Weber State. And then 2 years at BYU, and you can see the development over those 2 years. There was a bit of a he handled the competition jump, I think, better than most, which is one thing I was encouraged by. One thing I was less encouraged by was his grades dropping from 24 to 25 from PFF, and their inside linebacker grades aren't perfect, but that is it was a pretty significant drop. A lot of impact plays on tape, a lot of tackles for loss. I think he's got like 25 sacks in the last 3 years. I'm looking at it right now, about 35 tackles for loss. And so there's a lot of ball production there. Good athlete. I see instincts more than I see processing on his tape. I think I kind of use those terms together, and I should use them less interchangeably because I do that sometimes. I see more instincts than I see processing. I think his combine performance answered some of my questions about his athleticism. I had his relative athletic scorecard up, but his athletic testing really answered some of my questions about his athleticism and his ability to translate, and especially contributing on special teams right away. You know, day three, I want guys who are pluses on special teams. If I'm you know, drafting a linebacker with the hopes of being on special teams, not just that he can hang there, but that he can. Relatively quickly be an impact player there. And I just see that in a lot of Kelly's game. And you know, to me, the shuttle and three cone times were big pluses about his short area movement skills that I was a little bit worried about translating to the NFL. One thing that's true of him, but it's true of a lot of these linebackers, like I said, they're leaders, really good players, tacklers, athletes that end up being middle linebackers. They get kind of funneled there. But he brings kind of the character, the durability, that kind of stuff, the motor that you're looking for. But I will say, even if I don't mention it for all these prospects, that's true of almost all of the guys that we're going to talk about today, is good character reviews, good motors, that kind of thing. A lot of them are team captains, again, just because of the position they play. So it's worth noting, but not overhyping for any one particular guy.
Yeah, it's very true, because they naturally reposition defensive players a lot, and they have to be respected in that way. And that is part of the reason they get put at the position. Now, Kelly is someone, I didn't look at his tape. He has a relatively poor tackler at the college ranks, a 2.6-1 missed tackles. Stops to missed tackle ratio is not good. He does have a pretty good career as a pass rusher, where he's had a 43% close rate during his career. And that's a fair amount of total pressure events. He's been used a lot as a pass rusher in his career, but still a pretty good relationship. There's enough athleticism there that I probably should have considered him, but he's really a bad tackler for a middle linebacker. He has all the size you want. He's already 23. I probably should have given him more time or some time on the tape as opposed to leaving him off the considerations list. But that's interesting.
One thing I misspoke on was his grades. I was looking at the wrong row on my spreadsheet here. He didn't have that precipitous grade drop from 24 to 25. So just wanted to correct myself there.
He's had a terrible tackling grade for three straight years with PFF, under 60. Yeah. And for a draftable inside linebacker, that's not nearly enough. And then if you don't believe PFF's tackling grades, then look at the stops to missed tackle ratio. And that's also very bad for a draftable linebacker. So that's a lot to overcome. And not saying he couldn't somehow be a pass rush specialist who's in there on some downs. It doesn't really fit the Ravens' needs if they did. But you know, anyway, I appreciate you introducing me to a player I didn't really consider. That's always nice. So we'll move on to my number eight guy, if we're good on that.
Well, one thing about Kelly, not to push back on the tackling thing, because that's the big weakness. I think the way it manifests as a weakness are things that can be coached. One is over-aggressive pursuit angles, and he's just flying by and sliding guys. The other thing is he is trying to lay big hits. This is like I said, a lot of impact play production, a lot of, you know, backfield production. He's surging to the ball. He's trying to lay big hits. I think some of those things just need to be reined in and just like have his technique be rebuilt a little bit. Again, projection to the NFL, question in how much he can develop in that regard. But the concerns I see with his tackling, I think at least are coachable.
Okay, so at 6'2", 240, he's got all the size you would want for the position from that respect. What he doesn't have is he has very small hands and short arms. And so those are really bad things. For block shedding, arm length is very important. For tackling, arm length is very important in terms of being able to do that. And hand size is always good if you have it. You want man hands. You don't want to be the, like that Seinfeld episode where you have woman hands and you're an inside linebacker. A player that I think I appreciate you bringing up, and I'll take a look at some tape of his. I'm going to go to my number eight guy at this point, who's Keyshawn Elliott of Arizona State. 6'2", 231, a 4.58 at his pro day. Another guy with shorter arms at 31 and a quarter. Turns 23 in December, so he's in that mid group of he's a little bit older than some of the big time prospects at the position. Mixed athletic profile. He's fairly clean medically. Did miss one game with a neck injury in 24, but otherwise he's played through what minor injuries he's had. Stops to missed tackle ratio is only 2.4-1. That's fueled by a 16.8% missed tackle rate. That's really hard to take at the college level. So I have to look at a player like that, as with I would with Kelly, and try and figure out what percentage of that is really correctable and how much of it is really a matter of length and hand size and how much of it is technique and laying a shoulder into somebody when he should be wrapping up. Or other elements, but he does seem to be quick enough to play the position. He's a little bit undersized and with short arms, so that's not a great place to start and not a good corroborating figure for the stops to missed tackle ratio. Second team All Big 12 in 2025. Lots of tackles, many of them are defensive wins, but in the offsets, a lot of that with that high missed tackle rate. I think you have to look on tape and see if he really has the sideline to sideline range you'd hope for in a draftable inside linebacker. My opinion basically is that he doesn't quite play to that 4.58 40 time. And then I have a 4.58 40 that was measured at a pro day. So I already have a jaundiced eye on that. No doubt about it. They will find that guy in coverage. If he's on the field, quarterbacks and offensive coordinators are going to try and figure out how they can exploit him. He is a very effective delayed blitz guy, and I thought he did a really good job of choosing gaps. He piled up 7 sacks at Arizona State in 25. That's a non-trivial number. You got to look at that and really value it. I think he's a two-down Mike linebacker, and unfortunately, he'd be replaced by a Will linebacker and a dime on third down, which really mitigates that value as a pass rusher that we've seen. So the Ravens have had success with those players. Jameel McClain, Josh Bynes, Ray Lewis as a rookie was exactly that kind of player who was replaced on passing downs. But I think he may go undrafted because of his specificity of role. I have him as a 5 or 6 round value, a day three, mid to late day three guy. But he may go undrafted entirely, and then the Ravens could pick him up easily then.
Yeah, I think you summarized kind of my my concerns about Elliott. It's, to me, it's a little bit like whack-a-mole. You have, right, to me, one of two things I'm looking at very quickly early on are the athleticism and the processing, because a guy who plays faster than his athleticism is going to be able to translate to the NFL. A guy who has the athleticism has kind of the upside in the runway. I don't see either of those things in Elliott. And so really, if I don't see one of those two things, I get a little worried. And then, like you said, it's where does he fit in a defense? And the answer I had is just not really anywhere. And because he's not an elite athlete, I don't see as much upside in special teams, because that was kind of, that's, you know, was kind of my reason. I will say this is someone I wanted to mention specifically as a leader, because I saw on tape just the amount of communication that he's doing from his spot was exceptional. Exceptional enough to be worth noting. It's not necessarily a weakness of anyone that we're talking about, but I really felt like his the character reports that he has are really good, and I think that matches what you see on the field. And so sometimes it's nice to see not just good character reports on a guy, but also seeing how that dedication, leadership actually physically shows up on the field, not just in terms of mentality or enthusiasm, but in pre-snap communication.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I guess we're moving on to your number 7 guy now.
Yeah, my number 7. This is a bit of an out of the box pick. This is Indiana's Aiden Fisher. Obviously rose to a lot more prominence during their championship run. I don't really put a lot of stock into tackle production. So, but a good amount of tackle production. To me, this is an instincts guy. This is a guy who I see playing a lot faster on tape than he tested. The athletic concerns, he is not an ideal size, shape, speed guy. But in terms of someone who I would take a shot on wanting to develop mentally, this is someone who I see comfortable in the middle of the field, good at identifying where run plays are going and pre-snap keys. And so, kind of like I mentioned with Elliott, he doesn't have the athleticism, but he has both the instincts and the processing that I'm looking for, really at a relatively high level for a college player. It really depends on if you think his athleticism can play in the NFL. I think that his play speed is enough. Certainly, again, as I think we're still kind of talking about maybe an mid day three pick now. I think we're still maybe not quite at my day two guys. And so for his pretty developed instincts, processing, mental game, I think that's why I'm particularly interested in him. But again, he just might, the size, speed, the physical concerns might just keep him off boards for some. And I can understand that.
Fairly incredible rise. I have him at number 13, but he walked on at JMU in 2022 and left the field as the national champion in Indiana. So a national champion in Indiana. Still did it in just 4 college seasons. Oftentimes, guys who have a career like that will spread it out over 5, but he does turn 23 in December. He doesn't have as much of a size concern as 6'1", 232 as he has length and hand size concerns. That's unfortunately shown up in his missed tackle rate. His stops to missed tackle ratio is 2.7 to 1. Okay, let me take a moment to say why that ratio is so important, and in particular the inside linebacker position. It is literally like the strikeout to walk ratio for pitchers. The missed tackles are enormous at the position, and they can be big yardage where they are not always that way for defensive linemen, say. The stops are how many of his tackles are coming close to the line of scrimmage, which is really important. Those are the ones that are defensive wins by the old football outsiders methodology. So, you gain less than 40% of the yards on, I think it's 40% or less actually on first down. I think it's 70% on second down and 100% on third or fourth down. So those are defensive wins among those 43 plays, and he sort of reduces missed tackles significantly to be a valuable player. he sheds blocks reasonably well. I thought that was important for where his arm length was. But I think he really lacks the athleticism to play at the next level. He's met every challenge so far. He led the national championship defense. It's hard for me to, you know, say, oh, he's just not going to make it at the next level at this point. But, you know, he's got a 14% career missed tackle rate, and that ain't going to fly in the NFL. It's going to be a lot higher than that at the NFL level.
One thing you mentioned, he's 22. That's one of the other things that gets me excited about his abilities to see the field from the middle as well. It's like he's very young. He walked on. It's unusual to see like a developmental curve for a guy with this frame and this athleticism the way I do. But I think it's like you said, he's overcome every challenge. And I think that's why I'm particularly high on him.
Okay, I had a couple more things to say. 3 interceptions and 12 passes defense. He gets in the lane a fair amount. For the Ravens, I think he'd be a 2-down Mike inside linebacker, Mike linebacker again, who makes his mark on special teams. And again, the Ravens have done that. Josh Bynes, whatever, would come off the field on third down, and they move a Will over and put in a dime back at the same time. So it can be done, and it certainly could be done when you have Kyle Hamilton wearing the green dot. So your Mike does not have to wear the green dot for the Ravens. It's a big advantage in terms of, you know, putting the linebackers you want on the field on a down-by-down basis. I think he would be very likely a leadership role on special teams right off the bat, and he'd be a guy who would be ready to take the green dot or take the starting Mike role if something happened to Roquan. He would have to be as a rookie. All right. Anyway, I had him at 13th. I don't like him as much. The 22-year-old is interesting. Say again. Okay, you might be having some connection issues.
No, I was just saying we talked about that need to maybe kind of develop a backup mic earlier. Yes, I am.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on. That was your number 7 guy, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll move on to my number 7 guy, and that's Kyle Lewis of Pittsburgh. I definitely had some problems like putting him as high as I did, but he's at 6'0", 220, and a 4.53 40, turned 22 in March. He's one of the younger guys. Small but outstanding athletic profile, had a 10-yard of 158 and a 3-cone of 697. Sub-7 3-cones are generally reserved for positions that don't even want to test at them, which is usually cornerbacks, slot corners a lot of the time, are the guys who lead in 3-cone. And there's still corners avoid the test like the plague because they're afraid that it'll mark them if they turn in a bad 3-cone time. But Lewis has medicals for a 2023 knee injury, and we lost 3 games and a 2025 concussion, 1 game lost. That doesn't seem significant, but you don't want to have your first concussion occur in college if you can avoid it. And you know, to have 2 fairly significant and potentially recurring injuries like that is not a good thing. His overall career coverage numbers are pretty good. It wasn't as good as last year, but 6.4 yards per target and a 79.2 career passer rating against, including 6 interceptions. His coverage is where he is going to tend to make his marks. His stops to miss tackle ratio is only 3.0-1. The line, if you want to know where I considered like a draftable inside linebacker, I want him to be above 4 if possible. And there's one guy in this draft that, believe it or not, that's at 23.5. So we'll talk about him a little bit later, but 3-1 stops to missed tackle ratio, going with a 13.2% career missed tackle rate's very high. Good ball skills, poor tackler, second team All-American in 2024, took a step back in 25 when he was second team All-ACC still. I think, you know, he's a guy who has to take a trail or roaming role. He's not a guy who is going to immediately jump into the gap and stuff. That's just not his game. And that will force your Mike to be a particular type of player. So with Mosley and with Roquan both, they've been forced into more heavy coverage roles than you might otherwise like for those players, because the players next to them didn't really have a lot of skill in that area. Hunts the football very effectively, becomes focused on the quarterback. He's a very good quarterback reader, but he sometimes forgets his zone assignment when he's trying to read the quarterback. And he's been a good career pass rusher as well. He's gotten in there and had a 44% close rate, which is a pretty decent pressure rate as well. A very tough guy to fit in on the Ravens. He'd have to play will linebacker in the nickel to realize value, but then he's blocked there by the best dime back in the league because that's who gets replaced by Kyle Hamilton on third down. I think he'll be a very good special teams player. He did actually block an extra point and return it for a two-point conversion in a bowl game against Toledo. So that was something. And I think there's a team out there that's going to want him in round three probably for what he can produce against the pass. I just don't think he's a very good fit for the Ravens. I have him as a round five value for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think a comparison to Trenton Simpson because of the safety conversion, the athleticism, the size, it's a little bit easy. I think he's got better instincts than Simpson. Again, this is a player who, to me, the talent is there, the NFL potential is there. I just don't think it's going to be in Baltimore, like you say. I think a team that's looking for someone to develop in that role is going to be crucial because I just don't know where he ends up playing in this defense. I will say one of the reasons I think he's still worth the pick if he's there, for example, really early on day three, it would be relatively easy pick for me, is just the pass game impact. It's just not something you can find in a lot of linebacker prospects is as much readiness to handle passing down duties as he is. You know, again, that's his conversion. That's his previous experience as a defensive back, which I will say has not shown up as much as we'd hope for Trenton Simpson, which is worth noting as a potential projection issue. But because he's also able to contribute as a blitzer, I think that gives him a little bit more of a rounded profile on passing downs. Kyle Lewis was your seven. He's my five. So,
okay. So you have it number five. So we're going to have one difference, I believe, in the top six, because none of my top six have been mentioned. And it sounds like that's the first of your top six that's off the board. We'll get into that in the second half of this show. Nick, it's always a pleasure to talk draft with you. I hope you'll be able to join us for at least some portion of the draft programming for all 3 days, at least for an hour or two at some point. And we'll talk about that after the show, no doubt. But tell folks where they can find your work.
You can find my work at BaltimoreBeatdown.com. We have, I think we're going to be debuting our, probably by the time this episode is up, we'll have our top 150 big board up. Me and Yuri, if you follow him on Twitter, have been really hard at work trying to build a nice rounded set of prospects, prospect rankings for everyone. I think it's really cool to see so many people in our community have their rankings. And so I really wanted to have a good big board to compare against everyone else's this year. So like I said, BaltimoreBeatdown.com, and you can find me on Twitter or X at Nick, N-I-K, Noseball.
All right. Outstanding. Thanks for coming on, Nick. Other folks out there, please join us for draft night. We'll be on each of the 3 days from the very first pick of the draft until the last Ravens selection is made, which will be in the seventh round. And we'll love to have you. Day three should be a great day. It's very fast paced. We work together on an interactive spreadsheet as we do this. People who've been on the show before as either a panelist or just in terms of watching the stream know how much fun that is to work with it. And in particular on day three, we're always naming our darlings for the next Ravens pick. Very Ravens-centric coverage also in terms of how does that pick affect the Ravens' chances to get the player they want is the question we're primarily trying to answer through the draft. Nick, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.